May it please the court, my name is Chris Maculis and I represent the plaintiff appellant Richard Graber, who is present in the courtroom. This court should reverse the district court's decision for four reasons. First, Mr. Graber spoke as a deputy sheriff and vice president of the Milwaukee Deputy Sheriff's Association on June 25, 2010. Second, his speech related to a matter of public concern. Third, Mr. Graber's First Amendment interests outweighed the interests of the defendants in providing efficient government services. And fourth, Mr. Graber's speech and association was the but-for cause of the defendant's deprivations against Mr. Graber. First, I'm turning to the issue of Mr. Graber's capacity as vice president of the MDSA. Mr. Graber in 2010 was the vice president of the Milwaukee Deputy Sheriff's Association. When he showed up to work on June 25th, 2010, he showed up as an intake booking sergeant in the jail in Milwaukee, the downtown jail. He was, as he arrived for his first shift, two deputy sheriffs approached Mr. Graber, and they informed him that deputy sheriffs were being staffed at the O'Donnell Park for a tragic incident that took place the day before. Those deputy sheriffs were being called and pulled exclusively from the jail. They came to Mr. Graber because he was the vice president of the union, and they knew that. Mr. Graber contacted the patrol division because they were charged and staffed with placing deputies out at the O'Donnell Park incident. He spoke to two separate individuals, one a sergeant named Carol Mascari and two a captain named Thomas Mepperton. What he did was he explained to them that he believed that the sheriff's office was violating the collective bargaining agreement between the union and the county in the way that they were staffing the overtime at the O'Donnell Park incident. They had some dialogue back and forth. The way the conversation concluded was they agreed to disagree, and they moved on. Then about an hour later, a deputy sheriff by the name of Joseph Keyless returned to the jail. Just in happenstance, he was passing Mr. Graber and approached Mr. Graber and said, "You know, Rich, I just got back from working about 18 and a half hours in a row, and I'm set to work again at 2 p.m. on June 25th. I got a problem with that. I haven't really slept a lot. I'm going to get 4 hours of sleep until I have to report back that very same day. Can you help me?" Mr. Keyless, knowing that Mr. Graber would...
And that deputy worked in the area that Graber worked?
Correct. He was assigned to the jail.
So that's an area, that's a person over whom Graber has some supervisory authority?
Yes and no. Right. His job is the intake sergeant.
He has no staffing responsibility?
Correct. And that's undisputed. As the intake sergeant, he had no responsibility to, you know, assign over time to deal with staffing issues. That would have been a different sergeant.
So he goes to, is it Nicklewicks?
Nicklewicz.
Nicklewicz?
Yes.
Nicklewicz. When Graber goes to him, does he say that this is about a union matter or this is about the contract, CBA?
Yes. Well, what he says to him is he doesn't specifically say the CBA or the contract. What he says is, "Are you aware that there's deputy sheriffs that have worked, you know, 18 hours plus and have to report today?"
To the jail.
To the jail.
The area in which he works.
Correct.
What I'm getting at is whether this is a matter of his personal concern or public concern.
He has no personal reason. He has nothing within his job responsibilities, either from an employment perspective or a personal basis, to have any affiliation with Deputy Keyless, who came to him that day and said, "Hey, I'm concerned about my lack of sleep." He would not be the guy. They weren't even on the same shift. Keyless was on second shift. Mr. Graber was on first shift. So they don't even cross paths. So this would not have – the only reason why they ran into each other is because he got extended overnight. And so when Mr. Graber was there on his first shift, Mr. Keyless was coming back from his extension. So those two never really worked together. Mr. Graber, you know, unequivocally would not have been the individual that Mr. Keyless would have went to. And he testified so. I mean, that's clear. He said, "I went to Mr. Graber because I knew he's the vice president of the union, and I had concerns that this was a violation of my rights." So when Mr. Graber goes to Deputy Inspector Nicklewicz to address this issue, you know, there's some factual dispute about what is said. But it's undisputed that what he does address, that is discussed, is a deputy sheriff, Mr. Keyless, has worked this extended period of time. I think it's a problem. I think there's a safety issue. Can you look into it? Now, after that conversation, so it's important that, because the district court sort of melded these issues together, at the time that Mr. Graber has his first conversation with the Sergeant Mascari and Captain Mevernon at 7:30 in the morning on the 25th, he has not spoken to Deputy Keyless. He has no idea that Deputy Keyless had to work 18 hours in a row and to come back at 2. He doesn't know those facts. At 8:30 is when he has this conversation, this is approximately 8:30 is when he has this conversation with Deputy Inspector Niklewicz, and he says, "Hey, Deputy Keyless, safety, can you address it?" The reason why he did that is because he was the vice president of the union. There would have been no reason for him to address that issue with Deputy Inspector Niklewicz but for the fact that he was the vice president. And one of the things that the district court grabbed onto was they said, well, the issue was resolved, that Mr. Graber had no legitimate union reason to go talk to Deputy Inspector Niklewicz. And that's just wrong, because at the time, again, if we look at the sequence of events, he had no idea that Deputy Keyless had worked these 18 and a half hours in a row. And he didn't know that he'd have to report back at 2 p.m. that very same day. It was a completely separate issue. And the court sort of tries to meld those together and say, well, he could have addressed that at his first conversation at 7:30 a.m., and that's just factually inaccurate.
Can you get to the comments that were made and when the district court credited Niklewicz's testimony that your client's comments were stated in an insubordinate manner?
Yes, I can do that, Your Honor. The issue of the insubordination, the court found credible Mr. Niklewicz's testimony as a really relates to the insubordination. I think where that plays in is this interest of the balancing between Mr. Graber's right to address these issues and the defendant's right to quash those First Amendment rights he has.
But what about this, our case, Domiano, that says that the First Amendment is not a license for insubordinate speech? How do you get around that?
Because the Pickering balancing test, it's not a one factor test. It's basically a seven factor test. The court has to weigh all of those factors. So, if we assume that Mr. Graber was insubordinate, something that he denies.
Right, but the court found he was.
Correct.
Yeah, it's a trial. It's a correct. Trial
yeah.
result.
I understand
not,
that.
If
yeah.
we're in summary judgment, that's the trouble I have with this case. Mm-hmm. If your case, if this were a review of an appeal of summary judgment, it would seem to me there might be questions of fact, but here those have been resolved by the trial judge, having evaluated the credibility of witnesses and made findings such as this was insubordinate discussion.
The district court's analysis is the insubordination issue plays into effect. They have to look at the case as a whole. So if we assume that Mr. Graber was insubordinate when he addressed Mr. Niklewicz on the June 25th date, I don't know that outweighs his overall interest. As the vice president of the union, the parties contracted in their collective bargaining agreement for the vice president to address issues relating to their employees with command staff during work. And that's a strong interest. We're talking about allocation of resources, public safety.
Does the Sheriff's Department lose its opportunity to have this hierarchical structure of a paramilitary organization where the commanders have to have compliance from those below them?
No, they don't. No. This was a minute. This is about a minute conversation that he had, Mr. Graber had with Mr. Niklewicz. That very next day, and again, this is undisputed, the contract was being followed. Things were pretty much as in Sheriff Clark's, this was his testimony, that things were back to normal, quote unquote.
Yeah, but that minute conversation, my understanding is the sheriff said he had never in his 20 years been spoken to in that manner.
I believe that Mr. Niklewicz said, Deputy Inspector Niklewicz said that was his testimony at the trial, that he had never been spoken to in his 20 years in that matter. again, that's what the trial court decided as part of its fact-finding. But
and
again,
when you look at our cases, you know, we talk about deference that needs to be given to an employer's judgment regarding the disruptive nature of speech.
But the
it's especially important in the context of law enforcement.
And I understand that. But the record is void of any information that this was, it actually caused a disruption. You know, there was no information. He wasn't telling anybody not to show up at work. He wasn't stopping anybody at the sheriff's office.
Well, that would have been taking it a step further.
Well, but, I agree with that.
And our case law doesn't say you have to go that far. You have disruptive speech, but it's protected as long as you don't get a group to join you.
But the case law also doesn't say if you're insubordinate, you automatically lose your First Amendment rights. I mean, that's the point. That's what the court didn't do. The court didn't look at all the factors. It didn't apply them all. Because we have to remember here, this isn't a situation, you know, the defense counsel cites the Greer case. This isn't a situation where, okay, he learned that an officer worked 18 and a half hours in a row. It wasn't like he jumped on the phone or called the local reporter and said, hey, listen to this. Let's put out this press release. He tried to do things according to the collective bargaining agreement. He went to his person in the chain of command that he can go to as vice president and say, hey, can you do something about this? This is a safety issue for our members and for the public.
So a vice president of the union cannot be disciplined as an employee for anything he does in functioning as the vice president of the union. He can do it in any manner that he chooses.
No, he can't do it in any manner. But when you look, it's about looking at it as a whole. I'm not sure the insubordination issue automatically says his First Amendment right are less or way less than the defendant's rights.
And that's, I see you're in your rebuttal time, but let me ask you, you're asking us not just to set aside the decision, but to require the entry of judgment in favor of your client. Is that correct?
That is correct. And the reason why is because the court, you know, has an independent obligation to review the facts and review the law and apply them. So I think the court has the authority to do that. And if I can, I would like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. McGillis. Mr. Winstrom.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. I represent the defendants in this matter. Before getting to the merits of the case, I think it's important to, again, discuss briefly the standard of review. We are dealing with a bench trial here and findings of fact made by Judge Callahan. Opposing counsel has indicated in his briefs that even findings of fact should be reviewed under a de novo standard. And I think the case law in this circuit is very clear that findings of fact must be analyzed under a higher standard. A significant deference must be given. And findings of fact by the district court must be upheld unless clearly erroneous. And there's a number of findings made by Judge Callahan in this case, one dealing with the fact that Deputy Graber or Sergeant Graber was insubordinate during his discussions with Niklavitz. There was also findings of fact made by the judge that the reason that Sheriff Clark had a conversation with Sergeant Graber that afternoon was because of his insubordinate rant to Deputy Inspector Niklavitz earlier that morning. So in looking at the merits of the case, we're dealing with two different conversations that Sergeant Graber had on the morning of June 24th. He first has a conversation with Sergeant Mascari and Captain Meverden. Now, in looking at that, the district court found that that speech was protected by the First Amendment, that he was speaking on a matter of public concern, and that he was speaking as a union official. Now, we take issue with that because the clear testimony from Mr. Graber at trial was that the reason he went to Mascari was he was concerned and he was upset with the fact that it was only jail deputies that were being called to the mandatory overtime at Adano Park. He wanted deputies to be called department-wide. He wanted patrol deputies. He wanted airport deputies, court deputies. He was concerned that the contract was being violated because only jail deputies were being called. Now, we believe that whether or not it's jail deputies or deputies from other departments are being called for mandatory overtime, that is not a matter of public concern. This is an internal management relations issue. It may be a union issue, but it certainly doesn't rise to the level of touching on a matter of public concern. So we believe that even the conversation that Sergeant Graber had with Captain Meverden and Sergeant Mascari that morning was not protected. But moving on to the conversation with Niklaiwicz, the district court made a factual finding, which is entitled to deference, that there was no legitimate union purpose in Sergeant Graber having that conversation with Deputy Inspector Niklaiwicz. He was clearly insubordinate. He started his conversation by saying he was sick of the sheriff screwing with the deputies. This wasn't a union member or union official going to his superior to raise a union issue. As the district court found, this was a personal attack. He was upset. He was using this opportunity to make a personal attack against the sheriff. This was in a public area. This wasn't in a conference room or an office of the sheriff's department. It was in a public area down at the within the jail, the administrative area, where other deputies and other officers could hear the dialogue between the two officers. And telling a superior officer that you're sick and tired of the sheriff screwing with deputies is clearly insubordinate. Deputy Inspector Niklaiwicz ordered Sergeant Graber to go back to work. He said, we're done with this conversation. Get back to work. He said, this is ridiculous. He continued. He relented in this conversation. Inspector Niklaiwicz again said, we're done. Go back to your assignment. And at that point is when Sergeant Graber brought up the fact that he felt this was a safety issue. Now, I think in looking at whether or not this truly was a safety issue, again, the context and the timing is important, because during his conversation with Meverden and Mascari earlier that morning, he was told two things. He was told, first off, that this was an emergency situation, that the Sheriff's Department was not able to follow the collective bargaining agreement during an initial emergency phase, but that that emergency phase was ending as of 10 o'clock that night. He was also told that the reason that primarily jail deputies were being pulled was because all of the other departments, all the other bureaus, patrol, airport, courts, were not available, either because they weren't in session or because they were already working overtime. And Sergeant Graber testified and admitted under oath at trial that the same safety concerns would have existed if a deputy had been called from the airport bureau or patrol or the jail. There really is no difference in the concern for burnout and officers being tired. You know, there was a tragic event at the lakefront on June 24th. A 13-ton panel of concrete fell on a young boy, killing him and injuring two other people. First day of Summerfest, you're dealing with probably the busiest day in the summer in downtown Milwaukee. It was all decks on hand. Every officer who was available was down working. So when you're dealing with the aftermath of that situation and the Sheriff's Department needing to function and to operate and staff this emergency situation, Captain Meverden made the decision that he was going to pull primarily jail deputies. And in looking at the potential disruption, so we don't believe his speech was protected either under Garcetti or under the Connick touching on a matter of public concern, but we also believe that the Pickering balancing test weighs in favor of the sheriff and the Milwaukee County Sheriff's Office as well, because we're dealing with an emergency situation. We're dealing with an officer who's being insubordinate to a superior officer in a public place. As Captain Bailey testified, I'm sorry, Inspector Bailey testified at trial, this was at worst a hindrance and at best a distraction. We're dealing with an emergency situation, and this did create problems for the sheriff's office and staffing. Deputy Inspector Niklaiwicz indicated this is, as you mentioned, Judge Williams, the only time in his 20 years of law enforcement that he had been spoken to in such an insubordinate manner by a subordinate officer. So the matter didn't rest there. He immediately ran to Inspector Bailey, and he wanted an internal affairs investigation started. As a deputy inspector, he didn't have the authority to start that investigation on his own. So he ran to Inspector. He was very upset because of what had happened between him and Graber earlier that morning. And Inspector Bailey said, hold off. Because this involves the sheriff, I want to have that conversation directly with Sheriff Clark. He talks to Sheriff Clark. Sheriff Clark indicated at trial that we don't have time to deal with an internal affairs investigation. I want to have this discussion with Graber directly. So a finding was then made by the district court that the reason that the sheriff had the conversation with Graber that afternoon was because of the conversation with Niklaiwicz.
But during that two-hour conversation, or however long it lasted, Clark makes reference to Graber's contact of Mascari and Mervaden, doesn't he? Doesn't he call to have Mervaden put on the phone?
Yeah, the sheriff initially found out about the conversation with McClaywitz directly from Inspector Bailey. He then is talking at the lakefront and the scene to Inspector Carr. And he's talking about the fact that Graber was blocking resources and the fact that he was insubordinate to McClaywitz. At that point, Carr says, oh, you must be talking about Graber, because Carr had heard through Mervaden that Graber had also called Mervaden that morning. So at that point, Sheriff is realizing not only did he have an insubordinate officer who had talked to McClaywitz, but that the same officer had also talked to Mervaden that morning. So during the meeting, the two-hour meeting,
District judge found that the conversation with Mascari and was protected speech.
He did.
So and it plays into the blistering 2-hour conversation he had with him. So isn't that enough for causation?
Well, but the district court found that the conversation with the district court found that the conversation with Mervaden and Mascari was not the cause of that conversation. The but-for cause, which is the causation requirement is required, the conversation with Mervaden and Mascari was not the but-for cause of the meeting. The but-for cause of the meeting was the conversation with McClaywitz. Had the conversation with McClaywitz never happened, Inspector Bailey never would, or Deputy Inspector McClaywitz never would have gone to Bailey. Bailey never would have talked to the sheriff. The sheriff never would have had the conversation with Carr down at the lakefront talking about Graber. That's the only reason that the sheriff learned about the conversation that Graber had with Mervaden was because they were already talking about it. And the reason the sheriff was talking about it was because of McClaywitz. But the district judge specifically found that the reason, the cause, and the but-for cause of the meeting was the conversation between Graber and McClaywitz. And again, that's a finding of fact that's entitled to deference. Both the sheriff and Inspector Bailey both testified that that the reason the sheriff wanted that meeting was because of the conversation with McClaywitz and the fact that he felt that Graber was insubordinate. There's no claim that Graber was insubordinate during his conversation with either Mascari or Mervaden earlier that morning. We touched a little bit on Pickering, the balancing test, and again, I think the content or the context of what was happening and when it was happening is important for the court to consider, and the court did consider those factors in finding that the sheriff's office had the right to curb speech that had the potential to be disruptive, and clearly an officer being insubordinate in a public place during an emergency situation like this had the potential for disruption. And it did create disruption. It became a matter of significant discussion within the command staff, both at the inspector level all the way up to the sheriff's level. So there were consequences, even though he didn't order Inspector or Deputy Inspector McClaywitz, you know, not to staff deputies from the jail. It doesn't have to rise to that level. There was clearly enough here in a paramilitary organization such as the sheriff's office that that the sheriff and the command staff had the right to restrict and curb that speech. Now, it was a non-disciplinary meeting. The sheriff specifically said, I don't want this to become a disciplinary matter. I don't want an internal affairs investigation started. I want to address this face-to-face with Deputy Graber. Now, the meeting, he thought it was going to be a five-minute meeting. The five-minute meeting morphed into a two-hour discussion because Sergeant Graber became a dialogue between the two of them. Even though Inspector Bailey testified that Sheriff did more of the talking, it morphed into a far-reaching discussion of the role of unions and management relations and those types of things.
The trial judge found it as an adverse action. It was that severe.
Well, the district court assumed that it was. We disagree with that. It was not. There weren't any threats made. There weren't any additional consequences.
I'm going to come after you?
Well, and that's an important point, Judge. There was a policy within the Sheriff's Department that any issues involving the interpretation of the collective bargaining agreement had to be directed at Inspector Carr. And one of the concerns that the Sheriff had was that he was bringing his concerns to other officers or other people in the command staff. And what he said was, I expect you to address issues of union interpretation with Inspector Carr directly. And if you don't do that, if you don't follow our policy or my policy, then there's going to be consequences. So he's basically saying, if you don't follow our policies, you're going to be disciplined. There's going to be consequences.
He called them terrorists? He called them a terrorist of some sort?
He did call him a terrorist.
It's a tough meeting.
He felt in the context of dealing with a death or a dead child at the lakefront that an officer
so
challenging...
Let's just say it was more than a conversation.
It was a heated conversation. The sheriff
was
upset.
The carpet.
I'm sorry?
He was called on the carpet.
He was
called on the carpet.
He was. But the district court specifically found there was no other consequence. The 7-day suspension that happened 6 months later was not related to the protected speech or alleged protected speech that Graber engaged in on June 24th.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
How much time is Mr. McGillis? Two minutes.
Briefly, on the standard of review issue, I'm not sure where counsel takes the position or states that I find that the review of all the facts are anything but a clearly erroneous standard. I mean, that's the law. The facts that the court found are reviewed under a clearly erroneous standard. But where I think the issue is how those facts apply to the law. I think the case law is clear that that's the court's independent analysis, that's a de novo review. And those are two separate things. The issue of causation, the court pointed, Your Honor pointed out, this meeting that they had between Mr. Graber and Sheriff Clark, there was no discussion about Mr. Graber's conversation with Deputy Inspector Nicolaevich. This wasn't when he walked in, you were insubordinate, and let me tell you why that's wrong. It caused a disruption. This is a paramilitary organization. You can't do that. This was, when you walked in, why are you blocking resources? Get Captain Medvedin on the phone. This is what I'm being told. You're blocking the allocation of resources. This wasn't about, you're insubordinate, you have to listen to what I say and what your command staff. That's not what the tone of the conversation was. It was about, Mr. Graber as vice president, the union's role in interaction with Sheriff Clark's command staff, and he should get out of the way. So, for the court to make the determination that the reason for the meeting was his insubordination just doesn't comport with the record, doesn't comport with the facts in the case. Does the court have any more questions? Otherwise, I'm finished.
All right. Thank you, Mr. McGillis. We'll take the case under advisement.